excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. Happy Wednesday. And this hour of Flames Talk is underway. It is Wednesday, February 5th. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The phone lines are open. Sorry, that's not true. The text line is open at 960-960. The text line, no phone lines. The phone lines are reserved for one person and one person only to kick off this hour. That would be color voice of the Calgary Flames. And all-around good human, Megan Mickelson's with us right now for what I called Wednesdays with Mick. It doesn't roll off the tongue, but, you know, it's also not weird like some of the other ones.
Right. Yeah. I'm good with it.
Although you did have one. I will say this. Somebody texted in this idea, and I believe it's one that you liked as well. Mick on the mic. That one we can work with.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I feel like they're both at kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, and that one is kind of cheesy with Mick on the mic, and the other one is just really plain and simple. So, I mean, I'm going to let you decide on this one, Pat.
There's also, I believe the initial one was Midweek Mickelson. There's Midweek with Mick. Camille says Mickelson Madness could work. I mean, there's lots of different ways we could go with it. But you know what? We're just happy to have Megan Mickelson on the air. That's the main theme. That's all I care about.
No, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, I could feel the sincerity. Yeah. By the way, Mick, if we're a little off kilter,
yeah.
Just before we came on, like, I can't even describe to you what was happening in this studio before we came on. So if Vix and I are a little off kilter, I'll tell you about it at morning skate.
We're having a time.
Okay.
We're having a time.
Well, you know what? It sounds like you're having fun. So that's all that matters.
It has been. I will
you
say
know,
that.
You know I'm all about that. So.
Exactly. That's why I'll be sure to tell you when I see you on Thursday morning. Hey, let's start here because we only get to do this once a week for long form. And so it's our first time having you on since the trade. The last time was last Wednesday, and it was the following day the Flames made their big trade with Philadelphia to bring in Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee. Each guy has now scored for the Flames. And each guy has played 9 periods with their new team. It's been a gauntlet. It's been travel. It's been nothing but games. They've barely had time to breathe since being acquired on Thursday night. But knowing all the circumstances around, friends, what do we think of the first 3 games for Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost as members of the Flames?
Has it only been a week?
It's been less than a week.
6 days.
That's crazy. That's crazy. That feels like the longest week of all time. But yeah, I mean, that just goes to show like what a gauntlet for these guys. I mean, they've been through a lot in the past 6 days. And, you know, I think of the fact they've played 3 games already and they're yet to have a full team practice, which, you know, it kind of blows my mind a little bit when you think about a new player or 2 new players going to a new team. You're trying to get to know everybody, learn all the new systems. And I feel like as a player, the one thing that you probably want the most is to get just a good team practice under your belt. Like that seems like it would be a luxury just to kind of get a feel for, just a full flow practice. That to me would be kind of the easiest way to ease your way into a team. Obviously not an option. And just especially with the fact that, you know, the Flames are obviously dealing with a lot of volume right now and the amount of games they're playing. So we've seen so many optional practices, optional skates, and rightfully so. But for me, what they've been able to accomplish in 3 games, given everything that they've been through, has been really impressive. Like, you know, no hockey player is perfect. And yes, I think they've both had their moments. Like Morgan Frost has had a few giveaways, a few turnovers, but don't we all? And Joel Farabee, you know, I think he looked tired on Sunday, but I mean, who wouldn't be tired given those circumstances? But as players as a whole, like, to me, I think that these guys have given the team and the forward group a major, major facelift and boost. And watching, you know, the way that they both play, they both have a lot of, I think, poise and puck patience and composure. And just the way that they think the game, the way they move the puck, the way that you can tell they're looking to read off their line mates, especially that top line of Huberto, Kadri, and Farabee last night. I thought that they were the best line for the Flames. And watching Joel Farabee and, you know, seeing how he was reading off of Huberto and Kadri and the chemistry that they're starting to build very clearly. You could tell he's a very intelligent hockey player. I also love, I mean, he had a goal called back and then, you know, scored again, which was fantastic to see because it was quite sad when that first goal was called back.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that it's very clear he's not afraid to go to the front of the net. And I love that. You know, it's Ryan Huska called him kind of a junkyard dog around the net. And he said it's where he makes his money. And you can tell he's not afraid to go there. He's not the biggest guy, but, you know, he definitely has no fear when it comes to going to the front of the net and creates and generates as a result. And the one goal that he scored last night that I thought it was impressive the way he was positioning his body around the front of the net in particular. Like, as a player, you can go to the front of the net and just stand there and try to be a screen. But it was the way that as the shot came, he kind of turned his body, you know, towards the net and changed his stick positioning. So not only does he go to the front of the net, but he does so, you know, in an intelligent way and with purpose in the way that he's positioning his body. And then getting time on the penalty kill, which he said, you know, we talked to him in Seattle on Sunday morning, and he said that the transition's been pretty smooth because a lot of the systems that the Flyers played, the Flames play as well, specifically in the D zone, it's very similar, but the penalty kill, he said, is very, excuse me, very different. So for him to go from, sorry, too many games lately, frog in my throat.
I feel that.
going from one team that plays one specific style of penalty kill to another team that plays a completely different penalty kill with absolutely no practice, just video, like you're not even practicing it in practice, and he goes out there and he's on the PK, and I thought he did a good job. That to me was impressive. And then Morgan Frost, obviously, he's been great in the faceoff circle. He's over 56% in his three games, and I loved him talking yesterday about how, like, his preparation that goes into, you know, winning faceoffs. Like, he studies, they all do, all the centermen study other teams' centermen, and then he makes adjustments, you know, to counter the moves of individual players in specific guys. But you can tell he's a highly skilled player. He's a great puck possession guy. And then, you know, you look at what he's done on that first power play unit, and he has just, I think, elevated that whole unit. It is a lot more dangerous, a lot more unpredictable. You know, I love how he comes down on the strong side on his flank, and I feel like he just sucks everyone towards him. And, you know, that's a skill that it's not easy to do. You have to have a ton of patience to do that. You have to be very strategic and specific with your positioning. But the way that he's able to open up the ice for others and the decisions that he makes, I think he's been great for the power play as well. So, you know, I think there are two excellent additions, and they've been great players the first three games that they've played, considering everything that they've been through, especially. But I love both of them so far.
Yeah, and I'm going to add a little bit of context to everything they've been through, because, Mick, I think you've laid out a lot of what I have seen, and not that I would ever disagree with you, but, like, it's very clearly evident the skill sets that these two players have brought to the Flames and how much deeper the Flames forward group is because of their additions. But for me, the true evaluation is going to come after the Four Nations, after they've had a bit better chance to settle in, after they've got some practice time under their belt, but also just some time to catch their breath, because Philadelphia played a back-to-back set on January 29th and 30th. Of course, the trade happens on the 30th. The 31st is an off day. Then they play on the 1st for Calgary and the 2nd for Calgary and the 4th. So they had a run of 4 games in 5 nights, 4 and 6, and then 5 and 7. So you want to talk about no practice time. How about just some time to relax and unwind? Like, they've been going to the rink to play games.
Sleep.
Well, yeah. Like, get a rest in. Game day nap, yeah. Like, but have an opportunity
like
to
just watch a show on Netflix or something.
They haven't had any time whatsoever to get accustomed to Calgary, not the Flames, but Calgary, new surroundings, obviously new teammates, new management, new coaching staff, everything. But they had a stretch where they played 4 games in 5 nights, and the one night that wasn't a game day was a travel day from Philadelphia to Calgary. So as much as I think I've enjoyed what they've been able to bring for the Flames, particularly Frost and showing his offensive skill set, poise with the puck, the impact he's able to make on the power play, and Farabee in just sort of the two-way game that he brings and what he can add to Kadri and Huberto on that line, I want to give them a chance to breathe and come out of the Four Nations break a little refreshed, recharged, maybe relaxed, and a lot more acclimatized to the entire situation. Keep in mind, we're playing at altitude here, though, and I know people kind of roll their eyes at it, but it's a real thing coming to Calgary and playing here consistently. You hear it a lot from, particularly, I hear it a lot from junior age players that are coming to Calgary for a Hockey Canada camp, and you'll get the odd NHLer that'll admit that, yeah, there's definitely a change in elevation when you come here, and it affects your fitness, your breathing, all that sort of thing. But I just want to give them a little bit of time to just settle in. That said, the early returns, I think, have been very positive for Calgary.
I've really, I think it's take. Oh, do you want to jump in, Mick, before I go?
No, I was going to say that was well said. Thank you for the context, Mick.
I just really like the options the Flames have available to them now with these two players in. Feels like before they were kind of playing with a shortage of top nine forwards. Now it feels like they've got 9 top nine forwards, maybe 10 when Connor Zeri returns. And so it just feels like if you're Ryan Huska and this coaching staff, you've got more options. And so, you know, I'm still waiting. I thought Farabee popped the most against the Maple Leafs, and obviously had the 2 goals, and only one of them counts. But it was good to see where those goals came from. Hey, like, one of them was a redirect right in front of the net. One of them was at the side of the net, kind of just at the side of the crease, and Jonathan Huberto puts the puck towards the net, and there's Farabee to swipe it in. That's the one that got called back. But, you know, him being in that area, that's something the Flames need more of, more greasy goals. For one of the other topics we're going to talk about here is more 5-on-5 goals. So if you can get more of that from a guy like Farabee. So I thought he popped for the first time in a big way against the Maple Leafs, and so that's a positive sign. And Frost is just, you know, one of the things I was told when Frost got recalled was that we're talking about a cerebral player here. And that is so apparent when watching him play on the power play, the way he works that pivot on the half boards, and just does a nice job of reading the play and does a nice job of looking one way and the pass goes another way because he already knows what he's doing. That's been really impressive. His entries have been very, very, that's another thing that we heard, right? It's like a really good guy entering the zone, power play or 5-on-5. We saw that on the goal he scored in Seattle. We've seen that multiple times on the power play. That's been really good to see. And so you can just tell that he's got a real high hockey IQ at both ends of the ice. I like his two-way game. I like the way he drives a line. And Mick, maybe the most important thing is what you talked about with faceoffs, right? And it's why I asked.
Exactly.
It's why I even asked Ryan Huska. We talked about it on the postgame show Tuesday night. I asked Ryan Huska on Wednesday, like, just because of that, would getting him in on the penalty kill at some point down the road be helpful? Because he is your best faceoff guy and can win draws on the weak side. I just, that's such a massive, massive part to this. And I'm not even a huge faceoff guy all the time, but when you're one of the worst faceoff teams in the league and you bring in somebody that helps it significantly, like, you can't overlook that. And that's another big thing that he's done. And 56% in 3 games, you'll take that all day, every day.
Yeah, and I do wonder if they maybe start to use him on the penalty kill on faceoff. I know that you asked Ryan Huska that today, and he said, you know, he be more inclined to use Farabee on the penalty kill or continue to do so. But, you know, I definitely think that with the way the penalty kill struggled, that that's something to keep an eye on and to consider, because that's a big part of the PK, is being able to win that initial faceoff in your zone, win it clean, and get the 200-foot clear, because then right off the bat, you're killing a good 20 to 30 seconds. And I do think that is a part of the struggles that the Flames have had on the penalty kills, winning that first faceoff. So I could see it.
Okay. Let's go from there to something that, you know, you asked the question to Jason LaBarbera on our postgame show on Tuesday. We've talked about this on multiple postgame shows over the last number of weeks, Mick. You know, 5-on-5, this group has not been scoring anywhere near as much. You know, a lot of the games of late, their power play's been outscoring their 5-on-5 work. And while all day with the power play issues that this group has had over the last number of years, you'll take a power play that's clicking, and you'll take 4 power play goals in the last 2 games, whatever. But you still need to score 5-on-5, and there have been nights where they've scored a power play goal, and that's all they've scored. Tuesday, they scored 2 power play markers, just the 1 5-on-5 goal. As we move towards the real crunch time, how does this team generate more at 5-on-5?
Yeah, and I know this is something that you and I have talked about, and there's that element of, you know, making plays, you know, off of, or getting shots, scoring chances off of weak side plays, and getting pucks to, you know, move laterally more in the offensive zone, finding seams and then shooting off the pass. I know that's something that we've talked about, but the game last night in particular, you know, a big reason why they weren't able to finish 5-on-5 to me was execution. And, you know, there was, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 chances where someone's in a prime scoring shooting area and, you know, they have half the net open and they miss the net. And so to me, I think, you know, last night it was very obvious that the concern and the issue was execution. And, you know, that's a big part of it as well. And maybe as a player, you know, you're overthinking it a little bit too much. You know, I'm not sure what's going through those guys' heads, but I do think that part of it is the execution. And when you do get those chances and you have half the net open, that you hit the net and that you put it in. So there's definitely something to be said about both of those areas. But I think, you know, one thing that was very evident in the game last night is that, you know, the Flames can't cheat on offense. The way that they play in the identity of their team is, you know, they get pucks in behind other teams' defensemen. They're heavy on the forecheck. They cause turnovers, and then they get the puck to the net that way. And so, you know, there's also, I would say that's the third thing. When they do all of those things, they have to bear down on, you know, maybe the first shot's not going in, but it's those second and third opportunities with pucks that are just kind of sitting and laying there. Those are the ones that you have to execute. So, you know, I think it's a combination of all three of those things. I do think that, you know, adding Farabee and Frost, I think the Flames have had some better looks and have been much more dangerous 5-on-5, just with the balance that they have in their three lines and in the top nine. So, you know, I think that it's something that they continue to work on, that has to continue to be an area of focus. But to me, like, it comes down to execution at the end of the day. You know, you're too far into the season to really change the way that you play. You can try to generate more off of weak side plays and find those seam passes. But the Flames don't have a player like, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, who we're going to see on Thursday night, that's going to be able to skate the puck from end to end and do what he does. So, you know, it has to be, you know, within the way that they play now, within their system, within their structure. But to me, it comes down to execution.
I do think there's a lot to be said for the newfound depth up front that the Flames have with Farabee and Frost, and you're adding a couple of players that have historically been able to reach the 40-point mark. And in Frost in particular, I think his ceiling is more closer to 65, and we'll see if he gets the opportunity and has the ability to do that here with the Flames. But when you sub out two players in Kuzmenko and Pelche. Kuzmenko, who was absolutely hair-pulling, frustrating offensively for the Flames, and Pelche, who I don't necessarily think is a top-nine forward, and you're able to insert two players that, whether or not they're having their best seasons to date with the Philadelphia Flyers and a change of scenery, we'll see how it plays out, but you're adding two players that historically score at half a point per game. So just by sheer movement of parts, you should think that a little bit more offense and trickle down into the five-on-five element should potentially come for the Flames, because as you mentioned, there is no Nathan MacKinnon, there is no Connor McDavid, there is no magic elixir that's going to suddenly make the Calgary Flames that much more dangerous five-on-five. And even trying to find those seam passes or weak side plays, I wonder if they have the personnel that'll be able to execute those on a regular basis to try and change the offensive philosophy to do that. So as a result, you do need to get more pucks to the net. You do need to create more chaos, more tips, more second chance opportunities on rebounds. To me, with the personnel that they have, that would be the formula that I would go to. But it's easy for me to sit here in a radio station and go, oh, this is what'll fix the Flames' offensive woes when it comes to five-on-five scoring. It's more nuanced than that, but I do think the injection of the new guys helps with that overall depth, and the trickle-down benefit of that should be more goals and a five-on-five.
Well, and Mick, how much do you think on top of that, you know, when they get... Because I think getting Ball and Zeri back, now of a sudden you've got, you know, because Ball helps solidify a pairing, and as much as, you know, we don't typically look to the blue line as like a primary offensive source, one of the things you always talk about, and rightfully so, and you haven't played the game as long as you have, you realize as much more than anybody that, you know, offense doesn't come just from the forwards, and it's not like it's that five-man thing, and two of their most important guys are not playing right now. And so when Ball comes back, instantly your five-man unit, when those two, Ball and Anderson, are out there, gets better. And when Zeri's back, instantly what the group is doing out there, whatever line he plays on, is going to be better. That's the only other thing I'd add, is just like how much, assuming, knock on wood, they stay healthy in their next two games, when inevitably the two injured players that they're missing right now come back after the break, it makes you wonder how much correlation there's been since Zeri's been out of the lineup, and we haven't seen the new guys in with Zeri too, and that's been kicking around my mind as well.
Yeah, and there's two parts to that, right? There's Kevin Ball and his ability to kill plays in the defensive zone, and you know how much he's able to minimize the amount of time that the Flames spend in their own zone. And for the amount of ice time that he gets, like it's over a third of the hockey game. So that's not a small deal. That's a really big deal, missing him. And the D-Core has struggled a little bit with that. So, you know, spending too much time in their own zone, you know, that's a big part of not being able to generate five-on-five offense. And then the second part of that, obviously, is just how dangerous Connor Zeri has become as a, you know, a threat to score or create on a nightly basis. And those are two guys, to me, they have left absolutely massive holes in the Flames lineup. And I don't know, or don't think I anyways, didn't appreciate, you know, what important players they were to this team until they were out of the lineup. You know, it's like that old saying, you don't realize what you're missing until it's gone. Well, that's the way I feel about those guys and their importance to this Flames team. And the difference that they could make, both from a defensive standpoint, but also in generating a lot more, you know, offense for sure.
Well, Mick, there was just two. We had four topics, but we've only got time to hit two of them because there's 25 minutes in the books right there. We are chatty today, but that's what we like. And I mean, the Frost Farabee topic, such a juicy one because it was such a big deal, and we haven't had an opportunity to kick it around on in this forum. So I'm glad we were able to get into that pretty at length on this Wednesday. For now, stay warm, and I'll fill you in on everything Thursday at Morning Skate.
Sounds good. You guys behave yourself, eh?
No promises. Yeah, I can't promise. Those are your rules, not mine.
Thanks,
Mick. All right, bye, guys.
Megan Mickelson's the color voice of the Calgary Flames. She joins us every Wednesday here on Flames Talk, and she joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And it's a Wednesday, which means it's time to check in with our Pacific Division insider. It's time to say hello to Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Hello, JD. How are you?
Pat, I am doing fantastic. It is lovely and rainy in SoCal. I think I got to send an invoice to, we get a tax credit, I think, for rain out here.
I mean, if, you know, I know you're that creepy Fahrenheit, but we're in the minus 20s out here, so... You enjoy your rain. We have no sympathy for you.
Yeah, I'm not expecting any. But that's the kind of guy you are anyway. You have no sympathy, no heart for anybody. I know you.
Very true. Very true. Hey, let's spin around. There's lots happening in the Pacific Division right now. Since the last time we talked, in fact, a ton has happened in the Pacific Division. What, three trades, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all of them involved a team in the Pacific. Obviously, the Flames deal with Philadelphia. We'll get into Vancouver's two deals and then the San Jose deal with Dallas as well. But let's start in this province where Edmonton has now taken over top spot in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Golden Knights are just in a free fall right now. I mean, you know, we talked about last week, you know, their horrible history in January, but it hasn't gotten any better in February. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had that game against the Rangers where they blew two leads, very uncharacteristic of them last night. I thought they had the better of the play against the Islanders. I mean, they badly outshot the Islanders, badly outchanced the Islanders, but... You know, struggling to score goals right now is their problem. I mean, I think it's like 23 goals, you know, during these, like the last eight games or so. And, you know, the overwhelming majority have come from either Thomas Hertl or Jack Eichel. So it's been a struggle, to say the least, for the Golden Knights. And, you know, Bruce Cassidy says, you know, when we get some offense, we can't get a save. And when we get a save, we don't get any offense. So they're going through what every team tends to go through at some point in the season. But, you know, they've banked enough points that it's not a problem right now. But it's definitely something to monitor.
And we'll go to Vegas in a second again. Set us up for this Wednesday matchup, though, for the Oilers, who sit on top of the Pacific. And then they've got the old Connor versus Connor on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you look at tonight, and Edmonton comes off as back-to-back. Coming out, you know, they're on a back-to-back. They have that late comeback against St. Louis. And Pat, did you watch that game?
Well, kind of. The Flames were playing at the same time, but had it on in the background.
Did you see overtime?
I did see some overtime highlights.
Okay, because Colton Parayko went brain dead in on the overtime goal. I mean,
he dumped
the puck in. It was just like, you just gave the Oilers a gift with Connor McDavid on the ice, and you never want to give Connor any more help. But, yeah, it was a nice, for Edmonton, a very nice win. They go into Chicago tonight. Yeah, it's Connor versus Connor, which, you know, at least stateside just doesn't get enough airplay. And it is the back end of a doubleheader on TNT. But, what kind of caught me off guard is Calvin Pickard's numbers are really good. And I think they're quietly very good. I mean, he's earned, I think, like 16 of a possible 24 points for Edmonton in his starts. You get those numbers from a backup goalie, you're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. As closely as I follow the Oilers, you know, I've been talking to people. You know, people are saying, you know, do you think Edmonton's an option for John Gibson? And I'm like, well, he'd be an upgrade for sure. But, you know, I guess he'd be the upgrade over Skinner and not necessarily. I mean, I think if you're Edmonton, you know, that's one spot that you're going, okay, I think we feel comfortable enough that we don't need to make a move there. I still think the Oilers are going to try to add to D. I don't think John Klingberg is solving, you know, all of
what
Edmonton's
are you talking
questions
about?
On the back end.
But I don't know what you're talking about. I think John Klingberg's the answer.
Right.
For
Calgary, it may be.
Exactly. One more on Vegas before we switch gears there, as they have relinquished the top spot in the division. Like,
how much longer do you envision these issues continuing as they've stretched into February?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine on that. I mean, look, there, you know, I'd like to point to, you can't really point to injuries too much. Yes, William Karlsson is out, but they're deep enough down the middle without him that they should be able to overcome it. You know, they add Brandon Saad, and they're, you know, it was interesting just to see how Bruce Cassidy's deploying his lines. I mean, I think, you know, right now I kind of get the impression that they're just kind of trying to figure some things out, tinkering around and trying to see, you know, what's our best options of line combinations. But I still think they're going to make another deal.
Right.
Like, it's just who they are.
For sure. That's so, yeah, it's the MO they've always had, right?
Yeah. They'll figure out a way to add because, you know, I don't know. Is it the malaise of, you know, Bruce Cassidy can wear on you. You know, Bruce Cassidy, Peter Laviolette, like those are coaches that, you know, players just need a break from. So maybe for Vegas, the best thing that they've got going for them is the Four Nations. And
yeah,
while they're going to have still what four or five guys playing in the tournament, I think them, like a lot of teams around the league, it's a good time to hit the reset button.
Right. Okay, let's move to one of the other big movers and shakers here over the last little bit, and that would be the Vancouver Canucks, who, of course, made the long-awaited move on Friday when they traded JT Miller to the New York Rangers, and then a few hours later, they also acquired Marcus Pedersen from the Pittsburgh Penguins in a separate deal. I guess more than anything else, the big story there, JD, is that the JT Miller saga is now over.
Yeah, it's addition by subtraction. You know, look, Jim Rutherford laid the groundwork in that article,
yes,
you know, in the Globe and Mail, where, you know, he's going to get 70 cents on the dollar. And for now, that's what he got. Philip Hedl is not JT Miller. But getting, you know, needing to move that personality out of the room was essential for them and then allows them to do some other things. So, you know, look, they're still going to need help down the middle. There's no question. And we still have to figure out what they're going to do with Brock Besser. And then, you know, you look at last night's game against Colorado. It's so typical Vancouver. You know, we've seen this from them earlier in the season. I'm trying to remember which game it was. And now it kind of escapes me. But, you know, you think that they're going to get stomped on by Colorado. No, you know, we've got Miller gone and no Quinn Hughes in the lineup. What do? They blank the Avoy.
Yeah.
You know, so they get a really good performance out of Thatcher Demko. I mean,
he needed that shutout, didn't he?
He did. He needed a win. He needed at least have a game where he felt good about himself because he hasn't had too many of those since coming back.
Yep.
So that was, you know, an important win for both him and the Canucks because look, Kevin Lankin has done more than a yeoman's job in goal for Vancouver, but you know, you're only going to ride that horse so long before I think it wears down. And so, yeah, that for them was a significant win as they head in the break. And then they've got a similar schedule that you guys have, right? They've got Toronto on the weekend. And are we going to hear the Canucks saying, oh yeah, for Toronto, I guess we're going to have to play at 4 o'clock, you know?
Hey, we got him here at 7 o'clock. We got him at normal time, so it was great for us.
Right, but you didn't get him on a Saturday night.
No, like, we did not get him
on a Saturday. I'm thinking about Leon's comments. You know, anything for Toronto will play at 5 o'clock Edmonton time for hockey night in Canada. So they're going to have to play at 4 o'clock, and I'm sure that you know that gets a lot of oxygen on 650, and the rest of the Vancouver market. You know, anything for Toronto.
That might be a fair statement that you're making there. What about this? Okay, so Vancouver right now has some big-time question marks when it comes to Quinn Hughes on what has been a completely revamped blue line. Your take on what's happening with Hughes and what this blue line looks like now.
Well, it looks a heck of a lot better than it did when the season started. I mean, you know, when healthy with Hughes and Roenick and Myers and Marcus Pettersson, that's a formidable group of four. And so it puts Vancouver in a much better spot. And be interesting to see what else they do. You know, who do they move out and who do they try to tinker with, maybe they can move a guy like a Carson Soucy. Maybe they move him out to try to help shore up, you know, some of their questions up front. But that is definitely a really good group of four for Vancouver. And I would think that they're going to keep Marcus Pettersson beyond this year.
We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He's our Pacific Division insider. He joins us Wednesdays here on Flames Talk. Let's move to Los Angeles, who now only have a one-point edge, albeit with fewer games played, but just the one-point edge for the third and final playoff spot in the Pacific Division. They're one up on both Calgary and Vancouver. The Kings have 60 points, and the Flames and Canucks each have 59. Now, of course, because of LA's situation, Kings have played three fewer games, so their points percentage is significantly higher. All that being said, it's just a one-point gap for the Kings right now.
Yeah, and you have to win those games, and then they get Montreal tonight, and it's that, you know, in many cases, Pat, it's that dreaded first game back after an extended road trip. We've seen it more times than not with teams around the league that you just don't have your legs. You've been preoccupied for the last couple of days and trying to see spend time with the family and get yourself caught up. And, you know, yes, Montreal's on the back end of a back-to-back, but I think they've played rather well in this spot. You know, they get Jakub Dobish plays tonight after Montembeau went last night. And the interesting with Dobish, there's two things that have stood out to me with Dobish. One, he's played much better on the road than he has at home. I think he's given up less, two goals or less in all of his road starts. His home starts, he's been a little more generous to the opposition. The other thing with Dobish is that outside of his first game, Pat, against Florida, the opposition has scored first in each of the other games. And still, Montreal's been able to come back and win. But he's had this propensity to giving up the first goal of the game. But I think Montreal has, I watched them play in Anaheim over the weekend, and, they jump out to that 2-0 lead, and then the offense went away. I mean, I think they're going to, they'll give LA a good game tonight. But for LA, you've got to start banking some points. It's nice to have games in hand, but you got to win them. So I think for LA, who's been offensively challenged, that game against Carolina where they finally, they scored four goals, that equaled what they had scored in the three or four previous games on the road trip. They had been shut out twice on that road trip. And then, they faced Freddie Anderson, who has been very generous to a lot of teams around the league. I got to tell you, Pat, if I'm Carolina, I got to find myself a goalie. Like, I can't go into the playoffs. I've made the big trade for Rantanen. I'm going with Kochetkov, and I'm trying to find a way to get, whether it's Carl Vomelka or John Gibson or whoever, out of for my other goalie. Freddie's not healthy. But back to the Kings. Yeah, I they've got to find a way to generate some offense. They've moved the lines around a little bit tonight. We'll see how it goes. Drew Doughty comes back. He was supposed to be eased back in. Well, eased back in for Drew Doughty was leading the Kings in ice time in the very first game he played. And then, get to the third game that he plays, and Mikey Anderson goes down with a hand injury. So Doughty, ends up having to play, he's playing, 26, averaging about 25 minutes a game in the three games. He's had some good moments, but he's also looked like a guy that's been out of the lineup since October. So just to see what happens for Four Nations. And then the other thing with LA, Mikey Anderson went down on the road trip with a hand injury. He's got a broken finger. It'll sideline him for a bit. It does get Brandt Clarke back in the lineup, and that's been kind of interesting because when Doughty came back, definitely not to my surprise, Brandt Clarke found himself a healthy scratch for two games.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens there. Like, I think, when Mikey Anderson comes back, it won't surprise me if Clarke continues to be a healthy scratch because, Pat, defensively, they don't trust him right now. And I think that that's pretty obvious because Jacob Mavrari, who has been a guy that's been in the Kings system for quite some time and, you know, was called up and even when the Kings went to 11-7, was playing ahead of guys that were already on the roster, you know, once again finds himself ahead of Brant Clark. So it's interesting to see what happens with Brant Clark. But they can't afford to trade him. Like, I heard Elliot suggest in the podcast, you know, that, you know, teams are calling L.A. and saying, you know, trying to at least gauge, you know, is there any interest in moving him? Pat, they've killed their defensive depth. When you think about the guys they've lost in Brock Faber, Sean Dursey, Sean Walker, like, you can't keep giving up these guys. Mm-hmm. They don't have, you know, Brant Clark won't be Drew Doughty, but you can't afford to give him up and you can't afford to give up on him.
Let's stay in SoCal and head to Anaheim. What's going to happen with John Gibson? You mentioned him a little earlier in connection with the Oilers, but like, what are the Ducks doing with Gibson here?
Well, I think, you know, here's the deal. He'd be traded, I think, a lot. It'd be easier to move him if he didn't have 2 years left on his deal. If he had one, I think a deal would be a lot easier to make. I think the other thing is that for Pat Verbeek, you know, he's going to wait and hold out for the highest bidder. He's in no rush to have to move him. And it helps Lucas Dostal not to have to, you know, burn out because, you know, the Ducks defense has been okay. It hasn't been great. And that was, so you don't want to destroy the confidence of Dostal. And you get a veteran in Gibson. Now, the other thing with Gibson, he's got a modified no trade. The market is very small for goalies. As I've said, I believe it's Edmonton, Carolina, and Columbus. And my understanding is that if John Gibson gets moved, he wants to go somewhere where he feels he has a legit shot at being number one. So that would, you know, that he could be that goalie definitely in Carolina. And, you know, look, I know Elvis Merzlikins has been on quite a run of late, but he could be number one there. So, we'll, you know, a lot of it has to do with Gibson. And then also the Ducks have to decide, you know, are they going to have to pick up any of the salary?
Right.
So, you know, that's what's going on with John Gibson. I think that's the best that I can explain it.
And what's going on with Trevor Zegras?
Pat, I think they should. I don't know. I've heard various things. One thing that was very interesting to me that one Ducks person shared with me over the weekend when I was at the game on Sunday was that Trevor Zegras is one of the few players on this Ducks team that backs players off because of his skill and speed. You know, they don't really have a player like that. And so I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, you need guys like that the opposition can respect in that manner. So, you know, we've seen flashes from Zegras and he's trying to improve his 200-foot game. He's played more of a role offensively, getting on the scoreboard. He scored, you know, he got his stick on a puck that found the back of the net. It was the game-winning goal against Dallas last night. Look, I'm not the GM, but I wouldn't be trading that guy. I think that there are other pieces on this team that you can move. I think the skill level is there. And look, we talked about when they signed guys like Killorn and Radko Gudas, part of that was to help the growth and maturity of players like Zegras. If you're going to make that investment in those two players at this stage of their career, especially Killorn, I don't see why you give up on Zegras. I just don't see it.
Fair. Last one, and we'll yeah. finish in San Jose. The Sharks on Saturday trade Granlund and CC to Dallas. And your question, and I think many others' questions, is what's Mike Greer going to do next on this roster?
Well, you know, I went, you know, you go down the roster, and really the only UFA he's got is Luke Cunningham. And that's a guy that, you know, I think the teams would like to have come playoff time. He's not going to necessarily, you know, score you a lot of goals, but he'll do the dirty work. You could have him kill penalties if necessary. So I think that's the one guy that's left on the roster that you can move. I think, look, Mike Greer, I think, has done a really good job. And when you look at the California teams, like I think 2 or 3 years from now, both San Jose and Anaheim, I think, are going to be in a far better position than the LA Kings. So Cunning's the one guy that's left for them to be able to move that's got, you know, UFA status.
JD, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll do it again next Wednesday, but great time to do it this week because what an absolutely insane week in the Pacific Division, and we might have a few more of them between now and March 7th. Great stuff as always, my friend.
Hey, if anyone wants to, you know, you're bored tonight, you want to make some money, first period over Chicago and Edmonton. The numbers are unreal. Bet your mortgage. No, don't bet your mortgage, but the numbers are unreal, including Calvin Pickard. 10 straight games that he's been in net, the first period has had at least 2 goals.
Okay. Good to know. Good stuff, JD. We'll do it next week.
All right, bud. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Always a good betting nugget or two from JD when he joins us on Wednesday. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast Hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour, he's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Thanks to Shan Virgie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers, and that'll start to wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you as always by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.